You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Roy Anthony Shabla. Roy returns after a short hiatus of about 4 or 5 years to discuss his recent grand opening in Long Beach of his art show in Southern California. But the last times we've conversed, he talked about his books of poetry. He's a healer, a psychic, and a poet, and is involved with all things raising consciousness and spirituality at www.blesstheworld.com. There, he has a site of natural and holistic healing, wellness therapy, and spiritual rejuvenation. He is the founder and spiritual healer, feng shui master, and meditation teacher, and his work has changed the lives of thousands of people. So if you're interested, go to his site where you'll find powerful spiritual remedies and healing treatments, or attend his grand opening on Saturday, October 8th at 6:30 p.m. at Marie's Wine Bar. Art on the Vine wrote a big column about it. It's in the blurb right here, right now, and I'll leave it up for several days. So before I get too windy and, you know, there's no time for Roy to talk, let's welcome him back to the show. Hi, Roy. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me back, Lance. It's nice to be
here. Oh, it's my pleasure. I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago that we talked the last time, and it seems like it's an eternity. Does it seem that way for you?
It does seem like an eternity, and I was trying to remember that last show that we did. We were talking about the upcoming presidential election, and we were talking about the state of the economy, and look at everything that's happened since then. It's been quite a whirlwind of a few years.
Oh, no kidding. And you live right down in Southern California. Are you still in Los Angeles?
Yes, Downey is a suburb of Los Angeles, and that's where my show is tonight.
And it is tonight. Well, that was why I was so excited to have you back on the show tonight, because it's all kind of timed synchronistically with my life and your life, and those wheels or spirals seem to be coming around again on a much higher level for both of us.
Absolutely.
Were you doing your artwork back when we were talking about your wonderful books of poetry and your other work that you do?
Yes, I've been making art all my life, basically, I was, showing work at that time. But right around that time, probably before we spoke, I started working on large canvases, and it's been about 6 years now I've been working on large canvases. And so the show this evening, the smallest canvas is 6 feet by 5 feet, and
wow,
the large canvas is 14 feet. And so it's kind of a relatively new, the last 6 years, that I've been working on a much larger scale.
Wow, that is amazing. Now, having done art and being an artist myself, what medium are you using?
So I paint on the floor.
Okay.
So either stretched canvas or unstretched canvas is on the floor, and I use latex paint. I have the paintings are layered up many times. There are long drying times for some. The 14-foot painting took over a week and a half to just be able to, get it to that I could slide it, because once again, a 14-foot painting painted on the floor is taking up the entire large living room.
right.
And so it kind of puts other aspects of your life on hold, such as entertaining or, and teaching class and, those kinds of things. And so working that way, I usually time things that, okay, if I start on Monday or Tuesday, it can be dry by the end of the week when I have to have, teach class on meditation class on Sunday when I have to, have guests or something like that over. So it's a little bit tricky sometimes to move things and paint and get everything adjusted, but it's wonderful.
Oh, it sounds like it. I mean, our life is our canvas, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the bigger my canvases get, the bigger my life gets.
Yeah. I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. Now, I'm looking at your paintings now on the blurb that comes up on the site, on my site.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that really just grabs me is the one in black and white. Even though it's a reproduction through the internet, I'm getting stuff out of that. How many times did you have to layer that? And do you know what you're doing, or do you paint intuitively? Do you have a kind of an idea of what you want to convey? How does that process work?
Well, I always think that if you have an idea of what the painting's going to be before you start it, you're in for a big disappointment. I have an idea of what I'm doing, but I don't know what the painting is going to be. Because it's a collaboration. It's a collaboration with spirit. It's a collaboration with the physics of gravity and, so there's science to it. There's spirituality to it. And there's sometimes me just getting out of the way. So my hands are in it, but, it's what's pushing my hands and there's a lot more involved than just me. So I can't really say I know what the painting is going to be before I start it. I just have an idea of what I want to do, and then I just see how it all comes together. It's a very interesting thing because people will look at paintings occasionally in early stages of them, and they'll tell me, "Oh, it's done, it's beautiful," but when I actually do finish it, then they amend their thoughts and they, "Okay, now I see it's done. Yes, it is beautiful." It's very interesting that because it's not their work, they don't have a sense of how it's going or where it's going. But you know it's right when it's right. Come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally agree with you. That does seem to be the creative process. It's almost like a fluid, perpetual motion. And I know I experienced that when I wrote my book, Tales of Zany Mystic, shameless plug there. In my life now, as I'm cleaning my own property and planting vegetables, it just seems to be like a huge canvas where I'm just guided to the next thing, and a bird feather will lead me someplace else, and then I get validation from something else. And it's just this endless trail of spiritual breadcrumbs. Mm-hmm. And life is actually starting to become exciting and to unfold in front of my own eyes. So I think I'm finally getting out of my own way, as you said, and experiencing that creative expression.
You know, I always feel like you start to enjoy your life when you stop fighting with it.
Right.
So I'm just telling you about my living room where I'm painting, and so I have to adjust, people coming over don't necessarily adjust to the schedule because my house is very bohemian and people kind of come and go and visit. Even though I'm a hermit, I still, have people coming and going. And so I've started, as you're talking about your garden, I've started entertaining in the garden much more. My garden is lovely. I mean, it's like a lush, in the suburbs, everybody has, a manicured lawn and one tree. And I have no lawn. I have plants everywhere.
Wow.
And it's just lovely to sit out there with a bottle of wine and talk to people all evening.
It sounds wonderful.
Painting in the front room has really expanded my life by, spending more time with people in the garden. And it's so wonderful to do it.
Wow. Well, you've just seeded some wonderful ideas for me and given me a whole new awareness of what I can do when I have people over, because I'm facing that situation now where everything is in turmoil as I'm beginning to remove the things that are no longer serving me. And what is the light that is there behind it, or the field, or the nothingness, is emerging as the brilliance. And so I'm wondering to myself, well, now where are people going to go? They can't sit on the couch. They can't. I've got, you know, so you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
But I wanted to say, I wanted to focus in on what you said about when you stop fighting with yourself. Do you feel, and I'm sure that, well, let me just ask it. Do you feel that that goes on a global scale as well, that when we stop fighting with ourselves, that the wars that will start to just evaporate as the illusion and denial that they are?
I absolutely do believe that. You know, when you think about our you know, we've got revolution going on in this country right now. Many people do not know it. You probably do. The Occupy Wall Street that is now occupying many cities in the country and around the world, they are doing this. So we've got this kind of revolution. Well, it's really this. It's in some ways it's very rational. You know, people have gotten to the end of their rope, but there's a rationality to it. Why have economic conditions gotten to the, well, because somebody is looking out for themselves in a small way, instead of thinking of themselves as a global entity. You know, if we thought about ourselves, what would you do if you were on the other side of this? You know, would you be so greedy, or would you be? Everybody wants to make money. There's nothing wrong with having a nice life, being able to pay your bills, you know, being able to paint if you, you know, the walls, I mean, or your paintings, if that's, you know, if you need to do it. I think that where the inequality comes in is this gross imbalance. And what happens is when you get to a certain level of income or fame or, you know, some place that puts you in this elite, you also become insulated from the rest of the world and what, you know, what the common person is going through. And I think that the ability to see more globally will relieve a lot of these quote-unquote wars that we have, actual physical wars, and, you know, that we have more going on now than in the past, and yet they're not really on our news, you know. They made a law several years ago that we were not allowed, the news was not allowed to show the bodies coming back from Afghanistan and from Iraq. You know, and during the Vietnam War, every night on the news, you saw the coffins coming in with flags on them. But, you know, we're not allowed, the media is not allowed to do that anymore.
And one reason may be because they're guarding the various mafia and drug trades for the elite and the royals. And so they really don't want people seeing how that happens. It's kind of like a smoke and screen thing. And the various agencies are, you know, importing drugs and selling them. So,
well, of course, it's very interesting. You know, the war in Afghanistan. So, you know, basically, why are we still there? What we've been doing is fighting the Taliban itself more than trying to find this specific person, that specific person. The reason it seems that the government has wanted, the government, whatever entity it is, has wanted to reduce the presence of the Taliban in Afghanistan is because the Taliban were keeping the heroin down. It's against the religion for drugs. So it has been going down. Over 90% of all the heroin in the world is coming from Afghanistan now. And it's coming out so much that it's very cheap. So you have a whole new wave of addicts starting, and people are making tons of money off of heroin because the American military is suppressing the Taliban that kept heroin down. So it's a very interesting situation. We look at it. I mean, I'm not as much of a political person as you would think, if you remember from the last broadcast.
I'm
interested in peace. I'm anti-war. And I'm interested in ecology and human rights. So I'm more interested in those bigger issues than how much taxes we pay, if the roads get fixed. I always figure that the people who are interested in nuts and bolts will take care of the nuts and bolts. And the people who are interested in you know, the more ethereal things, we'll take care of the more ethereal things. I'm interested in peace, you know, the planet, the human rights, those kinds of things. And so someone who is just not able to, you know, get the information about what's really happening just knows that we're at war. And we're told we've got to be there. It's for our own good, and it's our safety. By being over there, it's protecting us here. And somehow, if you say it enough time, people will begin to believe it.
Oh, yes. Well, isn't that funny how the war on terror is a very convenient, flimsy excuse for those people who that you just talked about to basically do anything they want as long as they keep people in fear and terror. We have no chance to open our hearts because the DNA literally contracts when we are in fear or anger. And so if we're kept in a state of constant turmoil like that, then we don't get to experience our higher aspects, which have to do with the DNA relaxing and becoming a ladder, which has various metaphors like Jacob's ladder and the rest of it, to the stars. So.
Absolutely, and that contraction, both of your DNA, your psyche, prevents you from standing up for yourself. And, you know, you become just one of the beaten down masses.
That's right.
It's very difficult to lift yourself out of that. You have this barrage of sound, of information, of fear that is being, you know, beaten down on you. That you have a difficult time of you know really finding out what is truly you, what is authentic to yourself, because you never get to be authentic.
That's
it's
right.
It's an interesting thing you bring that up, though, because a study just recently, back to me in art, a study just came out about people who look at art live longer and are healthier. Now, there have been studies in the past about happily married couples, not married couples, but happily married couples live longer. Because it releases chemicals, hormones in your body that are good for you. That you know, your body relaxes, your muscles, as you were talking about, your DNA. You are much more human. They've now found that looking at art does the same thing. And that isn't the person who spends 30 seconds in an art gallery walking through everything, but someone who will sit down on the sofa in the middle of the museum and stare at a painting for 5 minutes. You know how long 5 minutes is? 10 minutes. To look at something that someone maybe spent, you know, months, years painting, and, you know, has been some sort of a treasure for years, maybe since the 50s, maybe, you know, for centuries. And people will often look at these things in 10 seconds or 20 seconds or 30 seconds. But the person who sits down and actually gives it the respect, as an object and as, you know, and to the artist that created it, something changes in them. The chemical change, the brain, and it can be that relaxing of the DNA that you were talking about that you actually are healthier and live longer.
Well, you know, I know that they did that study on having pets and dogs, and I can swear right now that I am a big dog and cat and bird and, you know, lover. And my little Jack Russell has saved my life on many occasions, as of all my dogs. And I don't think I'd be alive today after 29 years living with HIV and AIDS if it weren't for my little dogs that I've had for decades and decades.
You know, they see the same thing with older people. That, you know, especially a lot of older people are alone. Their spouse has died, their children have grown up and moved away, and are maybe not so attentive. But they're able to have affection and just this sort of heart opening that you know, and that changes your chemistry. It really makes a huge difference. It's very interesting.
It is. And also, I'm getting that the more that we're able to touch and be touched is important. When we're babies, we come out of that womb of you know, our own fluids. And all of a sudden, we're in this larger fluid called air with prana in it, and it's pretty disturbing shock to the system. But we get all the touching, even if it's not positive, but we do get the touching. And as the years go by, we're taught not to touch each other, don't touch yourself. My goodness, don't do that. So all of these rules and regulations and beliefs, by the time we're 50 and 60 and we're trying to save money for our old age so we can retire, we're worn out and we're just, we have so many barriers up that it just takes a major shock to get through them.
Well, what really happens is it's almost like you become crisp and brittle.
Yeah.
You know, I think that a lot of the brittleness of elderly people has to do with just what you're talking about, that sort of starvation for affection.
Yes,
it's absolutely true. And of course, there have been all the studies on exactly that, you know, a monkey that's given a cloth, you know, surrogate mother, and the monkey that's given the metal surrogate mother, do completely differently.
Mm.
You know, one is much better adjusted and socialized, and the other one is you know, just strange in its socialization and behavior.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of these things that we think are that are just not important, or not important isn't the word, but they're just so common. Well, those are the things that are the most important. Looking at something beautiful, you know, having affection, touching, you know, communication with other people. I have a new spray since I've last talked to you. I have a few new sprays, and one is called Be in Love. I had so many clients that were interested in, for lack of a better word, marriage, a monogamous relationship, and it proves to be difficult, and science will tell you we're not meant to be. Well, of course, that's nonsense.
Right.
The reptilian brain or something that doesn't have monogamous relationships my response to this is the same thing. If you are going to behave like an animal, then you can go and poop in your front yard, and you know, you'll be arrested for, you know, touching yourself in public. You will be. There's a whole list of things that animals do that are not appropriate to human beings in public, and yet you want to behave like, you know, a dog, basically. Well, dogs are actually, it's a disgrace to dogs to say that men are behaving, you know, people behave like dogs. But a monogamous relationship is not beyond us. And studies show that looking someone in the eye for 4 minutes, caressing your arm, the other person's arm or each other's arm, while you talk to each other, this changes the chemistry in your brain that has to do with monogamy. And part of the reason people don't stay in marriages is because they never connect.
Right.
That initial chemistry of sex, and after that, it's sort of life. And if you didn't like the person at first, you just had that chemical reaction to that. You never get into the other chemical things that sustain it.
Right.
And so that's the spray that I now have, Be in Love, that you can spray it, and it will help stimulate those hormones that will get you over the bump so that you can make connections with each other and then let, you know, have it carry on.
That's wonderful, because I was just thinking, if you wanted to take that another step further, in a sense, we're looking for that love in the outer, in that confirmation from the mirror that is, you know, everything around us.
Mm-hmm.
But there are exercises that go way back that tell us that if we look in the mirror into our own eyes for 4 minutes, that it's extremely difficult and painful, and most people can't do. I haven't even been able to do it myself, but why not look into our own eyes and see the God or God Goddess, all that is within oneself, and caress our own skin and take care of our own temples, and then maybe we will attract that wonderful other that's part of life's mystery.
Absolutely. There are wonderful healing techniques of looking in your eyes in the mirror, and some of them have to do with healing the maternal lineage or healing the paternal lineage through forgiveness and acceptance. And it's very powerful work, and you will actually see your eye change. As you do the work and you're looking in the mirror, your eye will open more.
Wow. Are you talking about the third eye?
Well, that one also. When I do it for myself, I put my eyes close enough to the mirror that they sort of blur together, so they become they superimpose over each other, and they become like a third eye in the center.
Okay.
And then I stare that way, and I do the work, and then when I step away and just look normally into the mirror, the eyes have changed. It's just really very powerful work. And then even more powerful than, you know, my eye being more open or something, which is, you know, it's not changing the world, but my mother will behave differently, or my sister will, you know what I mean?
That's
where it's dynamic. I relate to them different. They relate to me differently. It works. You know, I mean, we are our own little hologram of our lives. And, you know, making adjustments in that connection where the brain and the spirit come together, or, you know, sort of interface in that place, is very powerful.
It's very
powerful.
Yes, wow. And what you're saying reminds me of my own experience that, there's somewhere that said if my eye becomes single, well, you just gave us the clue and the technique to do that, which I've never heard before. So that's really powerful. And I'm finding that in the hologram, everything alive is, and everything is alive, is like a giant feedback loop within loops within loops. And we literally are changing the world, but it's our own world. And in that miniature cosmos or universe that we are creators in, I like to say I'm God in my own universe, which is everything that I see, hear, feel, and do and experience on every level, then it becomes a loving, benevolent, guiding tool, a walking tool in every moment.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Go ahead.
If you would like, on another occasion, we could talk more about that healing technique of looking in the mirrors with the eyes. You know, I don't have all the information in front of me right now to go into it with you, but at another time, I think maybe people would be very interested in it. I've seen it be very powerful work, just very powerful work.
Yes, it seems that that's connecting the DNA, which is an organic crystalline substance, as far as I can tell from my own experience, that is basically shape-shifting in every moment. And so as we start to do this work, everything becomes more malleable and less rigid. We were just talking about the twigs and the green bough, and we all know what happens to the dead branches. They crack and break off, or they burn.
Mm-hmm.
But the trees in the big storm just bend with the wind. So if nature can do it on that level, it seems that we, on this level, on the upper branches of the tree from our roots, should be able to funnel that kind of strength to our lives, our own lives, and feed our own branches of our own life.
And, you know, the other thing that you mentioned is also very interesting, because it's not only that we are changing these things for ourselves, but we are changing things for, I'm not even going to say for other people, but for the things themselves. So, you know, I talk to my refrigerator.
I do, too.
Think I'm nutty, you know. If I close the door too hard, I apologize.
I do, too. You know? I do, too.
And
how
I talk to the paintings as they're drying. You know, I talk to them, I live alone. I'm so used to being by myself. To me, it doesn't seem weird. And if someone's around, I have an assistant working with me to paint, and I'm in the other room talking, they're thinking, okay, he's losing it today, you know, these crazy artists. But it's just respectful. You know,
yes.
We need to have as much respect for things as hopefully we have for other people, and hopefully we have for ourselves. And
absolutely.
I really run into a lot of people who don't have respect for things. And sometimes that's a clumsiness where you break things, and you shouldn't have, in the sense of it wasn't really an accident, it was you being disrespectful.
Right.
There are accidents, and there are things where you're just, you know, not being
unconscious.
Exactly. And I see this in people, so I talk about it.
Good.
But still, people don't seem to get that, you know, the chair and the table, you know, need to have some respect, and, you know, and they appreciate not being beaten up and dented,
right,
and, you know, those kinds of things. And,
right.
And then the other thing is that your reaction to these things. So you have a table. I just, you know, we talked about getting rid of things in our lives we don't need. I just gave away my dining room set because, well, I need to paint, so I don't have room for all of these things as I get bigger and bigger.
Right.
But, you know, if I'm sitting and looking at the dining room set and it's beaten up, well, that does something to you. We can be Buddhist enough that it's not important. You know, things are not important. On the other hand, we just talked about how you look at art, so basically you look at something beautiful, something that is that it has depth to it. You live longer. You have a chemical reaction. Well, what kind of a chemical reaction are you having in your body when everything around you is disheveled, when everything is beaten up or broken down?
Yes.
I mean, in Feng Shui, you say, then you're beating yourself up and breaking yourself down, and you look like that.
Yes.
But it's true in the chemistry of our physical bodies, you know, not to be all woo-woo juju about it. It's actually in the real world that if, you know, it's just the opposite. You're happy, you're getting good sex, or you're looking at a mountain view or one of my fantastically exquisite paintings, and you have this wonderful chemical reaction that opens your heart, that expands your brain, that really relaxes your muscles, that really gets the blood to flow, that calms you down, that gives you, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then you are in a space where it's cluttered, it's beaten up, things are broken, or at least scratched and dented and stuff, and it doesn't have that effect on you. Of course, just the opposite. You go to Italy, you go to Venice, and everything is decaying. You go to, you know, India, and the patina of age, of wear, it also becomes beautiful.
Yes.
But they haven't been disrespected.
Right. Very good.
There's a degeneration to these things.
That's
right. But they're still there after thousands of years, or at least hundreds of years, because people love them, and that love then comes back to you. So it's very interesting, this respect for things, and I like how that you were saying, you know, just the same thing. I think we need to have this in our lives.
Yes.
It's an important thing.
Well, yes, and what I'm experiencing here on my little ranch where I'm growing vegetables and restoring the property and walking the land like, you know, trying to find the leprechauns in the trees. To reconnect with the spirit of things, and it seems to require disconnecting from the electrical grid, which is an interference wave, and
right.
I found myself just organically turning off lights, and then at night, when the natural light is on, sometimes I can now hear humming, and I think, what in the heck is causing that? And I'll start unplugging things. And eventually, it seems like everything in the house ends up unplugged, like the television and the computer.
Right.
And then I get...
Well, you know I have no television in the house.
Oh, well, I'm moving mine out ASAP, except for one flat screen, so don't tell anybody.
I have a computer because, of course, it's necessary to us. But,
right.
You know,
at least now.
Unfortunately, it is, but...
Exactly. We're kind of temporarily logged into that, but I think... We might be going to an internet, which is what this is all about in the first place, is reconnecting our senses so that we become much more sensitive and aware of our, not just our global footprint, which is stomping all over the world like it's a cigarette butt, but the subtleties which the Hindus and the various ancient teachings tell us, is within the life force and essence of everything, including the air we breathe. So literally everything is recording our vibration and our frequency. So as we change that, we become more sensitive. And I found that it took me 5 or 6 years living alone in the country with no street lights, overlooking the American River with pine trees and pine cones, pineals, all around me. And I was completely unconscious of them all until about, I'd say, yesterday. No, it's been fairly recent for me that I've been reconnecting with the joy and the essence of all things that I knew when I was a teenager climbing up the foothills of the Santa Barbara and sitting by a creek and just listening to the gurgle of the creek and tuning into the different sounds of the voices.
It is very interesting, and, you know, once again, back to me and my sprays, but in case you haven't looked at the information, the radiation from Japan, from the nuclear reactor, is, and I'm just guessing at what I read, because I don't, but it's like 300 times worse than Chernobyl, and is continuing, and they do not think it will be contained, so not stopped, but contained for possibly another 50 years.
Oh.
That it is releasing several different types of radiation, each one separately in a tiny, you know, little, I mean, 1 pound of radiation can destroy the whole planet. You know, so what this is releasing into the air, into the food, into the water is happening and continues to happen. It's not on the news anymore. It's not.
No, it isn't.
It's not in the newspaper, and yet it continues, and it's getting worse, and the scientists that have been looking at this and speaking out are saying, Japan, but, you know, the world scientists, you're not telling the truth. This is way worse than you expect. This plant can be uninhabitable indefinitely, you know, so
that's
we'll be
right.
dead in a few years, but our children's 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 children will still not be, you know, will still be affected by what we have done this year to today.
Well, what's even scarier than that, Roy, is that my own experience is that these new, as the sun is reaching its solar maximum, or somewhere around 2012, which ties into a lot of other things, but it's been shooting out some pretty intense flares and X-class and M-classes, and it has been impacting me personally, the land. And when I pulled the dishwasher rack open to unload it, I accidentally touched the spatula, which is made out of plastic, and I don't have hot water. I turn it down to save money. The edges of the entire spatula were melted, and I've noticed this with other plastics, that they're literally dissolving, and I suspect that it's from these solar flares and these intense invisible rays that are much more powerful than even the atomics that we've come up with to destroy ourselves. Well,
I think that is true. I think that, but I think there's a little bit more to it in that what happens is, just think of it as a beam of radiation, whatever form of radiation it is, which carries information. It's passing through all this pollution that we have in the atmosphere. You may not have as much where you are because you're in the beautiful country.
We still have chemtrails overhead. Excuse me.
Absolutely. And then so it picks up that information. The sunlight itself is picking up the information of the pollution in the air and bringing that down onto us. And so that degenerates plastics, for one thing. That will accelerate aging because it dehydrates you. There are just so many things that happen. And that's what I was starting to say. You know, my remedy, one of the very first ones I ever designed, is called Radiation Cleanse, blessthebody.com Radiation Cleanse. And so, you know, I never had a microwave. People give them to me to bring me into the, you know, 20th century, and I give, you know, right out the back door, I give them right away to someone else or, you know, that doesn't care. I have a cell phone, computer, and we have electricity in the house. You have a refrigerator. I use a razor, but people use electric razors or hair dryers. All of these electromagnetic fields are forms of radiation. And once you put it down, that doesn't mean that it's gone. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you hit your thumb with a hammer, just because you put the hammer down doesn't mean the pain stopped.
Oh, yeah.
And so this remedy is to correct, you know, cleanse this radiation, correct it, because what happens with all these forms of radiation, from electromagnetic fields to microwaves to, you know, solar flares to ley lines in the earth, are that this is a radiation that, once again, talking about the DNA, but also the actual molecules of your body spin in the wrong direction. I mean, basically, this is about polarity. And so you are not polarized. You're not, your auras do not spin correctly around you. Your chakras do not spin correctly. Well, how are we supposed to not have war, let alone an interpersonal relationship, if your chakras are all messed up?
Wow.
And so your DNA is affected by this. The molecules of your body spinning, so the north and south of the atoms are lined up incorrectly. So the spray is to correct all of this stuff. And I once, many years ago, went to a healer and took some of my students to a healer. We were, you know, visiting different people, looking at different modalities. And this very interesting man worked with magnets. I don't remember his name right now. It's very interesting work. He was doing some great stuff quite a while ago. And so he was going to demonstrate on me. And he said, he started to work on me, and he was like, wait, it's not working. And I said, well, you know, explain to us what you're doing. He said, well, what I do is I pull, you know, and you may do this in meditation. I do this with my students in meditation. We use this sort of circuit that we have naturally with the earth, like an electrical circuit, and energy flows up from the earth into one side of your body and out the other side and down, and yada, yada, yada. To me, it's second nature. I've been doing this for so long. Well, this man's work was based on this, a similar kind of idea, but using magnets instead of meditation. And he had great effects with people. And when he tried to do it on me, he was like, but wait, nothing's happening. And I was like, well, you know, so he explained it. I said, well, you've got to switch over to the foot, you know, to the right foot, not the left foot. And he was like, well, theoretically that's true, but I've never encountered a person that it actually was real for. I said, because nobody has their polarity correct. And going to a quote-unquote polarity healer can make it even worse. I'm nothing against other healers. I always, you know, try to be respectful of other people's work. But I used to get people all the time that went to a polarity healer and were so messed up. You know, they couldn't walk, they couldn't drive. They were it's just very screwy with your whole brain psyche kind of thing.
Right.
But yes, this. But I said, I've been meditating like this for years and years and years and years. And he said, well, it's doing something. He put it on my right foot, and instantly everything was gone. He said, now you also clear faster than anybody else.
Wow.
But this
interesting you should mention that, because I've been doing a lot of research on the polarities within the body and magnetism, and just recently discovered something for myself that I've started based on the research of Andrew Norton Weber, which has to do with distilled water therapy or liquid therapies. And a few weeks ago, I started drinking a gallon a day of distilled water, and it literally is pulling all the negatively charged material and inorganic minerals out of the pineal gland and the various glands. And I'm finding that my senses are opening up again. And it can be, like you said, it can be done in a variety of ways, but you have to be very careful to know that the person who's doing it is conscious of what they're doing and why they're doing it, and it isn't just doing it by rote.
Exactly. Because
very good.
It's like getting a facelift. You don't want to go to somebody that's just had their first, you know, oh, let's try this out on you. No,
right.
Sorry.
Right. Facelift school.
You don't want to be doing that.
No, I don't, personally.
So, you know,
I haven't had some surgical corrections due to a major accident that almost took my face off, but it also managed to reduce my bulbous nose that I'd been self-conscious of as a child to a nice petite little Filipino nose, like one of the Aquinos.
So God works in mysterious ways.
Exactly. Tragedies are all, everything in our life is woven into it as a teaching tool and a lesson, and it's just us that needs to step up to the plate with consciousness and it, you know, that whole thing, as we've been talking about. Speaking of consciousness, and I want to ask you more about your essences, so don't forget, I want to ask you about how you came up with them. But on consciousness, do you feel that the consciousness of the artist and the spiritual connection is really a cosmic expression that begins to affect people in the same way, even if they're not conscious, that there are differences in gradations of the effect of the art depending on the level of consciousness of the creator?
That's a very interesting question. Absolutely. You know, we create who we are. We create what we are. And the artwork that we create, as well as the life we create, is who we are. And so if you're working from a low vibration, a medium vibration, a high vibration, not to be any judgmental in
right.
in where you are, because we've all been in one of these other places, you know, at different times in our lives, so
right.
or in our past lives, et cetera. So,
right.
you know, being, you know, arrogant or you know, better than, judgmental, it's really, you know, it's really fool's play. But,
right.
Yeah, you create your life, you create your artwork. Your artwork is the same way your life affects other people. You know, they will interact with you. My artwork does. And part of the reason that I create such large pieces is because what I'm doing is trying to create an environment. You know, I want you to have the painting and a sofa and a glass of wine, and that is you know what this experience is right now. You know, and so by making them larger, it's almost like you're living in them as opposed to with them. And so if you have a piece, you better love it. Or if you're drawn to it for a reason, it's possible that, you know, your higher self wants the painting to help release something in you so that you will come up to that level.
Right.
It's an interesting thing. But, yeah, I had a curator. I've had a couple other shows this year, two in Long Beach at Affinity Gallery, and a fantastic one at Bergamot Station at one of the best galleries in the country, Shoshana Wayne. And a big piece, but the curator from Affinity Gallery had said to me, you know, can you make something smaller? And I was like, well, I you know, I can make something small, but then it's small, you know, in the sense of you're not getting this effect from it. I mean, you love my paintings. Thank you for, you know, showing me. You think it's fantastic. You sit here and it's the, you know, it was the anchor of the entire show. Because it was a group show. Everybody loved it. I was a star. You know, I'm so fabulous and fantastic. Thank you very much.
Right.
But it's not that it's a big piece that makes me a star. It's that you're getting an effect from it, and you can only get that effect by it being an environment.
Wow.
Because you go into the artwork. The vibration surrounds you. It wraps around you like a blanket.
Oh, and I love that. I love
so,
that. And, you know, that triggers a story about my friend of mine who's an artist, and he is extremely good at what he's doing, but because there haven't been any sales of his larger pieces, he started doing scaling down and scaling down and scaling down until he's just playing into a very tiny field because he can sell them. So there may be a message in there about, you know, doing things for the sake of money and others' approval, and doing things because you're freeing yourself into the greater cosmos and pulling in the messages that are there to be shared with everybody freely.
Yes. You know, luckily, I'm very blessed that I've sold a couple of large paintings this year, recently, actually. A 6-foot painting went up to San Jose. There's already like a 9-foot painting up in San Francisco. I just sold down to San Diego. This is all California. A large painting that's bigger than 6 feet. So I'm very blessed in that. But honestly, big paintings do not go fast. It's very true.
Right.
But a small one, it's not the same. It's not the same vibration, you know, that you're getting.
Yes.
I always joke with some people around me. My studio assistant, for one, and a couple of others, that you know, after I finish the series of large paintings, once I get tired of doing all this big stuff, you know, I'm going to be doing postage stamps or, you know, postcard size will be as big as I can manage. Because, you know, maybe it will be, the pendulum will swing. But
Look at the Mona Lisa. It seems to be attracting more people than ever that just go across the country just to see that little teeny tiny smiling woman looking back at you, and that's not a very big painting, but over the ages, it has just, there has to be some, some kind of element of consciousness that gets concentrated or focused, whether it's big or small.
Right. Well, it's a small painting that has a big, I don't want to say a big ego, but a big spirit. You know, it has grown and grown and grown and grown. It's fantastic. And if you've ever seen it live, there really is some magic to it.
Yes, yes. I really do like what you're saying. It makes sense now for me to understand why the canvases are so large, that it's a literal trip into another dimension, or other dimensions, excuse me.
Yes.
And you're creating a larger portal for more people to enjoy and share and travel into it, and opening new worlds. Well, it's like Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. I'm painting Star Trek. I'm painting other worlds.
There you go. Now, on your essences, I'm sorry to jump around like this, but I do want
to
ask you, how do you make these essences? Where do they come from? What water do you use, and how do you bless them, and where do they travel? Mm. I mean, how does it work?
You know, it's not a real simple answer.
Okay.
But I have been sort of I've been sort of an alchemist for many lifetimes, and early on in this life, I was working designing remedies and also health protocols with a natural doctor when I was still a teenager.
Wow.
And so I really got a sort of nuts and bolts training on how to deal with people in a spiritual sense of what corrects their imbalance, what is going to correct it today, and what is going to correct it tomorrow.
Wow. Because, yes, it's an individual and unique process, and it shifts in every moment.
Exactly. And, you know, if you study homeopathics, if you study remedies, there is only so much that you can actually put into one bottle. And I've broken every rule.
Really?
Every rule that there is broken, and they work. Because of a number of things, you know, I'm working spiritually and psychically, whereas a lot of people are just working from what the book says to do, and I've had a lot of insubstantial help and guidance in my work from the very very beginning, and it's never led me wrong, and so what happens is, so I'm we talked about the radiation cleanse, for example, so. If I clear this radiation from you today, a homeopathic, a standard homeopathic, is only going to work at a specific strength for a certain amount of time. You know, if you're taking it for a headache, if you're taking a homeopathic for, you know, whatever it is, it's going to work, and then that potency, that strength, is not going to work for you again, and the homeopath needs to give you a different potency. Okay, and so you will go up. The idea of putting more than one potency into one bottle is there are traditional forms of it, and there are modern forms of it, and the modern forms of it have they don't know exactly the effects of it because it hasn't been around for more than 20 years. In the more modern form of potentizing, what I've been able to achieve is a remedy that if you have the situation that the remedy is for example, radiation, which we will all always have. I mean, we know that because, Japan disaster aside, cell phones and just the cell phone towers, even if you don't have a cell phone, you know you're being radiated by the people next to you. You are, you know, the electromagnetic fields, you have Wi-Fi. So I go to the LA County Museum of Art that now has Wi-Fi. You can be anywhere on this huge campus with your computer, and it's free internet service. But you may not realize, you go to Starbucks, it's the same thing. These rays or vibrations or radiations or whatever you want to call them are affecting you and are going through you everywhere, which is why when you go out into the forest where there's no electricity, no any of this stuff, you begin to feel very different.
Anthony, and, I mean Roy.
Yes.
We're just about out of time, and I wanted to, we can continue this in our future conversations, but I just want to say I'm sold. I am going to be, I am online at your site, www.blesstheworld.com, and I will order those today as I fully support what you're doing. I love you dearly, and I think that you're just a treasure on the planet today. And before we go, would you let people know what your website is and where you'll be at tonight in your grand opening of your artwork?
So my website is royanthonyshabla.com, S-H-A-B-L-A, and I will be at Mari's Wine Bar, which does have a website, MarisWineBar.com, and this is sponsored in association with the Downey Arts Coalition, which is downeyarts.org. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been a wonderful hour.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It is my pleasure, and you will come back.
Thank you so
much. Have a great
Thank
opening.
You.
Spending Thank lots
you
of love
very
and blessings.
Much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.